Film tape weaves through a projector beside a countdown from 5. The letters R-E-E-L are outlined in glowing tape moving through reels. Reel One Entertainment presents, in association with Jane Starts Productions and Dan Angel Productions, V.C. Andrews' Pearl in the Mist. A lush bayou on a sunny day. A vintage car with a Louisiana license plate from 1962 parked in front of a mansion. In a bedroom, a redheaded teen makes out with a young man on her bed. He starts to unbutton her shirt, but she stops him.
Oh, you know I have to leave in a minute.
15 seconds is all I need.
She rolls on top of him, kissing him passionately.
God, am I gonna miss you. It's killing me.
So don't go, Ruby. Stay here with me.
She kisses him.
Ruby!
I'll be down in a second, Daddy. You come at the back.
10 seconds?
Ruby's twin, Giselle, rolls her wheelchair to the top of a staircase.
What, am I supposed to roll myself down the front steps?
Giselle, my love. Try to keep an open mind, my darling. I'm sure you'll grow to love it there.
I'm sure I won't.
And you'll have Ruby to help you along.
Did you say that to make me feel better?
Their father, Pierre, kisses her head, then pushes her wheelchair.
There she is.
Outside, Ruby bounds down a staircase. She kisses her father and wraps her arms around him.
So Giselle's already in the car.
Mm-hmm.
Aren't you nervous?
I'm excited. Going to a school like Greenwood was something I never even dared dream about when I lived in the bayou.
If you weren't going to the greatest school in Louisiana, I wouldn't let you leave here.
They link arms and he leads her away.
Shall we?
Giselle sits in the back seat of a car. Her mother, Daphne, stands at her window.
Goodbye, sweetheart. Jenna?
Giselle scowls.
Don't get too used to me being gone, Mother.
Ruby holds out her arms to hug Daphne. Daphne holds out her hand, and they shake.
Goodbye, Daphne.
Good luck, Ruby.
Ruby purses her lips at Daphne. Ruby sits next to Giselle in the car, and Pierre leans through her window, smiling warmly. He leaves. Giselle pouts.
You went to a voodoo queen to put me in a wheelchair. You couldn't pay her a visit to get us out of this?
Will you ever forgive me for that?
Yeah. When I can walk again, so never.
Pierre and Daphne watch as the car ambles away.
Thank God they're gone.
Ruby and Giselle's car drives through a gate with a sign reading, Greenwood, School for Girls. Ruby and Giselle watch girls being dropped off by their parents in the parking lot.
What do you think?
I think if boredom is a major, I'm gonna get straight A's.
Giselle and Ruby enter the dorm's common room.
What are we, in the army?
It looks completely comfortable, Giselle.
Yeah, maybe to you. You grew up sleeping in the mud.
Welcome, ladies. I'm Mrs. Penny. I'm your dorm mother. You must be the Dumas sisters.
What gave it away?
You can pick any room you like since you're the first here.
I'm not rooming with her. I'll bunk with literally anyone else.
Excuse me. What's your name, girl?
I'm Samantha.
You and me are going to be roomies. Can you grab my bags for me?
I'm handicapped.
Giselle tosses Samantha her bag. Ruby cringes.
Good afternoon, girls. I'm Mrs. Penny. You'll want to hurry and get yourself settled. We have an assembly at 1:00. Your uniforms will be here shortly.
Uniforms?
I would like to welcome all of you to Greenwood.
The assembly.
You are joining a small elite group of scholars and athletes, and we expect you to make us proud. At Greenwood, unerring respect for your teachers and staff is expected without fail. We do not have time for, nor will we tolerate, insubordination inside or outside class. In addition, the possession of any alcoholic beverage or any drug on campus will result in your immediate expulsion.
Giselle rolls her eyes.
Loud music, smoking, or any act of vandalism carries severe punishments and a high number of demerits.
In other words, no fun at all in this dump.
She strikes her lectern.
I will have quiet when I'm speaking. However, your school experience is not all books and homework. We have a wide variety of campus activities for you all to enjoy. And we have several supervised social events with the Willowdale School for Boys.
Sounds like a real orgy. Can't wait.
It is incumbent upon each one of you to remember that you are all Greenwood girls now. And Greenwood girls are the elite of the elite.
In the common room, Giselle holds court while clutching a flask.
All you have to do is just let a boy think he's got a sliver of a chance, and he's basically your slave. Even if you just let them go to second, you'll never get rid of them.
Giselle takes a swig.
Which one is second?
Good night. What am I, trapped in here with a pack of virgins?
Hi, I'm Abby. I'm not really sure where I'm supposed to go.
Hi, I'm Ruby. And the only bed left is in with me, so I guess we're roomies. Here, let me help you. Wow, you really got great color this summer. I never even got to the beach once.
I guess I tan easily.
Lucky. I burn easily. Redhead, you know.
Ruby leads Abby away. Giselle narrows her eyes at them. Ruby's dorm room.
It's my first year here, too. Why'd you pick Greenwood for your senior year?
Well, my parents didn't like the school I was supposed to go to.
Oh, yeah? What was the matter with it?
Oh, there was just a whole thing. Who's Prince Charming?
My boyfriend, Beau.
Talk about a dreamboat.
Giselle at the door.
He was my dreamboat before Ruby stole him from me. Nice sister, huh? It wasn't like that.
Giselle rolls away.
I'll tell you later.
Morning. Painting class outside. A boot on display.
When a non-artist looks at our subject here, all they see is an old boot. It is an old boot, but you need to do more than just render what's in front of you. You gotta breathe life into it. It's got a story to tell. And that's what's gotta come through in your drawings.
The teacher looks over Ruby's shoulder.
Really great work here, Ruby. Although I'm not surprised. You know, your father made a point of being in touch with me. He said that your work hangs in a New Orleans gallery.
Oh, I didn't know he spoke with you.
I wasn't sure if he was just a proud papa or if we had a real prodigy on our hands. Looks like the latter.
Thanks.
Mrs. Penny.
Excuse me, Miss Stevens. Mrs. Ironwood sent me for Ruby Dumas.
Ruby's mouth gapes. In Mrs. Ironwood's office...
I want you to know, Ruby, that I have been made familiar with your history.
Ironwood nods deviously.
I'm sorry? My history?
Your mother Daphne and I had a very long telephone conversation. You spent most of your life in the bayou. With the Cajun people, I'm told.
Daphne does like to say things about me, doesn't she?
You are suggesting she spoke falsely.
I grew up on the bayou, yes.
I want you to know from the outset that I will be watching you more closely than I will the other students. You find that funny?
I find it curious. I suppose I'd like to know what I've done to deserve this extra scrutiny.
Whether you deserve it is my decision. I've had many dealings with swamp people, and I never met one that I could trust. I know your kind, your type. Your bad behavior is insidious. You learn quickly who is the most vulnerable, who has certain weaknesses, and you play to those weaknesses. But I do believe people can change their behavior, if not their nature. So it is your behavior I will be judging. You are dismissed.
Dusk. Ruby sits on a bench overlooking a lake. She weeps. Abby joins her.
Ruby. What's the matter?
Careful, Abby. You're in the presence of a swamp creature.
I wouldn't have guessed.
Oh, yes. I am a Cajun from the bayou.
Come on. Walk with me.
Ruby takes Abby's hand.
What happened?
I thought when I came here, people would stop looking at me like an outsider. It's the same thing wherever I go. It's like I'm branded.
I know that feeling. The reason I enrolled here instead of the other schools because they found out something about me. I'm what some people call a half-breed. I'm part Negro.
It is 1962, for God's sakes. Why do people still care about nonsense like that?
Well, they do. Anyway, my parents sent me here, hoping that having me immersed with the creme de la creme, it would rub off. No one would suspect that a Greenwood girl was impure.
And Greenwood shall wash us both clean.
God have mercy.
A tall man approaches.
What are you two doing down here? You know, you can't be here after dark. So go on and get back up to the school.
You're the groundskeeper or something?
Yeah. I'm a lot of things around here.
What's your name?
Buck. But it'd be mud if I got seen with a student after dark.
He nods and steps between them, pushing a wheelbarrow. The girls ogle.
Get a look at those muscles.
Mrs. Claiborne's family started the school, and she's still the largest donor.
You told us this twice back at the dorms, Mrs. Penny.
And I may tell you once more, dear. It's very important you're all on your best behavior.
We are lucky to be invited to her home for tea.
Buck trims a hedge.
Hi.
He and Ruby sneak a smile. Mrs. Penny leads Ruby, Abby, Samantha, and Giselle, pushed by a butler, into a grand foyer. Ruby furrows her brow at a grandfather clock reading 5:02. She looks at her watch, which reads 3:38. She catches up with the others in the sitting room. Mrs. Claiborne wears a purple jacket.
Good afternoon, ladies. I'm so pleased to make your acquaintance.
Oh, Mrs. Claiborne, thank you as always for inviting us into your marvelous home.
Oh, it's my pleasure. Please, everyone, sit. I like to make a point of meeting all the new students.
Your home is just lovely, Mrs. Claiborne.
Thank you. Abigail, is it? Well, let's get to know each other, shall we? I should probably start with the Dumas twins, so I know one from the other.
I'm the crippled one.
Ah. I hope only physically.
Giselle frowns.
You must be Ruby then, yes?
Yes, ma'am.
I understand you're the artist of the two.
Yes. I paint and draw.
Then you must be familiar with Renoir and Van Gogh.
Of course. Two of my absolute favorites.
I have one of each hanging in my foyer.
You don't mean originals.
My dear, I only have originals. Please, go have a look if you like.
Thank you.
Ruby stands and notices another clock reading 5:02. She returns to the foyer and gazes at a painting of a woman and child walking along a tree-lined path. Ruby steps up to another painting of a chapel looming over houses. Ruby ascends a staircase, following the sound of the piano. She ambles along a mezzanine before entering the music room. A young man stops playing as she enters.
Who's there?
He doesn't turn to her.
Oh, I'm sorry. I didn't mean to disturb you. I just heard you playing.
And who are you?
My name is Ruby Dumas. I'm a student at Greenwood.
Do you play?
No. I paint.
Well, ladies don't paint. You learned that from my Aunt Martha, or as you'd know her, Mrs. Ironwood.
We've met.
Yeah.
If you even have an ounce of independent spirit, she'll take care to knock it right out of you.
I guess we'll see about that.
He cocks his head.
You're from the bayou.
How can you tell?
No, you have a little bit of an accent, even though you try to cover it. My ears miss nothing. They make up for my eyes, which obviously see nothing.
I'm very sorry.
Yeah. You know, I get that a lot. You should probably run back to grandmother's tea before she thinks you're sneaking off stealing ashtrays or something.
It was nice to meet you, Mr.
Louis. Louis Claiborne.
Ruby spots a clock on a table, also reading 5:02.
You as well, Ruby Dumas.
Ruby takes her leave as Louis resumes playing the piano. Louis smiles pleasantly. Later, Ruby pushes Giselle, following Mrs. Penny, Abby, and Samantha.
That was so boring. I wanted to wheel myself out a window.
I thought it was very interesting.
That's because you were gone half the time. You didn't have to listen to that lady go on about her days as a Greenwood girl. I think it was nice how much she misses her school days.
Actually, I ended up meeting her grandson, Louis Claiborne.
You what?
He's blind, but you should hear him play the piano.
Ruby, you had no right to wander off in Mrs. Claiborne's house like that.
I wasn't. I just peeked in to see who was playing.
Oh, dear. Oh, dear. Mrs. Claiborne hasn't allowed people in that side of the house since the tragedy.
What tragedy?
Her daughter and son-in-law died. That's all I'll say about it.
Were they murdered or something?
I am not discussing it.
Well, there you have it. They were murdered. I'm psychic.
Giselle, that's enough. Ruby, I'm very disappointed in you.
I'm sorry. I didn't know.
What happened is the Claiborne's business and not for us to gossip about. That poor boy Louis was left an orphan and blind from his grief.
Isn't that gossip, Mrs. Penny?
Mrs. Penny's jaw drops and she steps away. Evening. Ruby stands at her dorm window, drying her hair with a towel. She gazes at Buck, standing outside, smoking a cigarette. He catches her gaze, then looks away. Later, Ruby brushes Abby's hair.
And how does someone go blind from grief?
Maybe it's psychological?
I guess. So was he good looking?
Very.
Good looking and mysteriously blind.
I'm dying to know what happened up there.
Well, you won't get it out of Mrs. Penny.
The keeper of the Claiborne secrets.
I can do without knowing theirs as long as they don't find out mine.
Giselle in the doorway.
Oh? And what is your secret, Abby?
Don't you have something better to do than eavesdrop, Giselle?
I wasn't. I was just coming in to tell you I got the dirt on this Claiborne tragedy.
You gonna tell us or what?
Well, I'll tell you my secret when Abby tells hers.
Fine. Never mind.
You might as well tell me, Abby. If you don't, I'll just make something up.
Abby scowls at Giselle.
Okay, I'll tell you.
Abby, you tell her, you're telling everybody. Don't say a word.
The reason I transferred to this school is because I got kicked out of my last one. I got caught with a boy.
Nude, right?
It didn't go that far. But he was in my room and I got caught. You happy?
Thrilled.
All right, Giselle. So now you know. What did you learn about Louis?
Maybe I'll tell you when Abby learns to be a better liar.
Abby casts her gaze down, frowning. Ruby paints the landscape alongside Miss Stevens.
That's nice. One thing I've learned to do is cheat a little bit. See here on my tree how I've added those subtle highlights to sort of capture the sun a little bit better?
Yeah,
I didn't get that on mine. I will commence cheating.
Miss Stevens follows Ruby's gaze across the lake, where Buck loads firewood into a wheelbarrow. He is shirtless, with his bulging muscles on full display.
We're studying landscapes today, Ruby. The human form.
This is Saturday. I'm allowed to daydream when I'm not in class.
I thought you had a fella back home.
Who I'm totally faithful to. Besides, Buck's way too old for me. But not for you.
He is not my type.
That's not your type? My God, what is?
Buck swings an axe.
Not that.
Okay. Well, I know a beautiful blind pianist I can introduce you to.
You met Louis Claiborne?
Mm-hmm.
Miss Stevens' eyes bulge.
What a sordid bit of business all that was.
Hold on now, you know what happened?
Of course. Everybody does. Gossip is the faculty sport.
I'm waiting.
Okay.
Flashback.
Louis Claiborne's mother was having an affair with a younger man. A much younger man. He was her dirty little secret. She would sneak him into the house while he was at work. But it didn't remain a secret from Louis's father for long.
Her husband bursts in and shoves the young man from the room. He backhands his wife.
No good trip.
No, no. After a while, he convinced her all was forgiven, but that was far from the case. He wanted her out of his life for good.
Evening, he smothers his wife with a pillow. She ceases to struggle.
Neither one of them was going to be leaving the bedroom alive early that morning.
He cocks a gun.
I love you.
Of course, he knew he was also sealing his own fate.
Louis, as a child, stands in the corner next to a clock reading 5:02.
What he never knew was there was a witness.
Louis went into a coma from the shock. And he didn't come out of it until weeks later. And when he did, he was completely blind.
Oh, Stevens, that's horrible.
You wanted to know.
No, I kind of wish I didn't.
Did you get a look at the clocks up at the house?
Yes, I did. They're all set to 5:02.
The time of the killings.
Ruby heaves a sigh. Morning. Ruby reads in the common room. Miss Penny bursts in.
I've got exciting news. You, my dear, have been invited back to the Claiborne mansion for dinner tonight.
That's big news.
Why in hell are they inviting her? I'm the interesting one.
Ruby, my goodness, hurry and get yourself ready.
Evening, Ruby enters a dining room adorned with fine crystalware and candles. She gazes at photos on display and lingers on one of young Louis, flanked by his parents. Mrs. Claiborne startles her.
You do like to snoop, don't you?
Oh, I'm sorry. I was just curious.
Well, please, in the future, look with your eyes and not your hands.
Oh, the irony.
Louis enters. Ruby smiles to him.
Good to see you again, Louis. And thank you so much for the invitation, Mrs. Claiborne.
Well, actually, the invitation was mine, Ruby. I'm afraid I was rather rude to you the other day, and I'm sorry. I would like to demonstrate to you that I'm not such a bad fellow for a blind recluse.
I'm smiling, by the way.
Good.
Later, they dine.
So, Ruby, tell me about the bayou.
Thank you. I don't know. I've just always found it so peaceful there.
You know, I actually visited the bayou when I was much younger. And I can still see it in my mind. It's very beautiful and mysterious, as I recall.
Louis?
Hmm?
Do they think there's any hope that you might see again?
You mean, is the problem in my eyes or in my brain?
I don't think this is suitable dinner table discussion.
They call my condition an emotional trauma. In other words, my eyes are completely healthy.
I'm sorry. I only asked because my grandmère was a healer in the bayou. She fixed people who everyone else thought were beyond hope.
With respect, dear, I don't think witch doctor con artists are the answer.
Also, with respect, ma'am, my grandmère never conned a penny out of anyone. She never accepted payment for her gifts.
And how much money have we spent on so-called respectable doctors, grandmother? Ones who haven't restored my eyesight by a single rod or cone in all these years. Yes, but who are the charlatans, I wonder?
Louis plays the piano. Ruby shares the bench, facing away from him.
Transports the soul, doesn't it?
Okay.
Ruby closes her eyes, swaying gently to the music.
That is so beautiful.
She leans her head on his shoulder. Ruby looks at Louis's fingers and furrows her brow. He frowns.
What's the matter?
Sorry, it's actually, just you leaning against me like that for some reason.
Oh, I didn't realize. I was just so taken with your playing.
This may sound a little bit ridiculous, but I've actually never been alone with a young woman before.
Not all that scary, am I?
I wonder, Ruby, maybe you'd allow me to touch your face. You could absolutely say no.
Well, sure you can. As long as you don't poke me in the eye.
Okay.
He reaches for her. Louis caresses her shoulder, then explores her face with his hands, starting with her forehead.
You look so nervous. Don't be.
He delicately studies her face, drawing his hands to her chin. She clasps his hands.
So, what do you think? Marilyn Monroe?
I wouldn't know.
Oh, of course not. What am I thinking?
I mean, of course, I've never even kissed a girl, so... You ever heard anything so pathetic? Sorry, I shouldn't have brought that up.
Louis, it's okay. I mean, that's an easy thing to fix.
Really? You would kiss me?
Sure. I mean, it's really not such a big deal. And if I can help you... Okay. 3, 2, 1.
He presses his lips out and leans in.
I'm sorry, what's funny?
Nothing. It's just you need to relax a little more. Don't be so stiff.
I shouldn't have invited you here.
Louis, I'm not laughing at you, really. We can try it again, okay?
Louis stands and steps away. Later, in the dorm... Ruby steps past Giselle in the common room, who follows her.
She returns! How was the big dinner?
Ruby sits next to Abby.
How familiar are you with the works of Franz Kafka?
That bizarre, huh?
Ruby shoots a glance at Giselle, who listens in alongside other girls.
There's a lot more to tell. But not here.
Ruby and Abby stand and leave. Giselle watches them with suspicion. Reading a letter.
Dear girls, you can't know how much your mother and I miss you, and how much we're looking forward to Christmas, when we'll all be together again. I hope you haven't been too homesick, and that you're making lots of friends at Greenwood.
Ruby!
Beau stands next to his parked car. Ruby grins and bounds into his arms. He catches her and she wraps her legs around his waist. They kiss hard.
Beau!
Samantha pushes Giselle.
Giselle. Good to see you.
No kiss hello?
She taps her cheek and he kisses it.
Is that the best you can do? So, did Ruby tell you about her big date the other night? It was scandalous. I had dinner with some big school donors. Blind man and his grandmother. A good-looking, suave blind man. And she looked awfully guilty when she got back. She's right, Beau. I don't know how to tell you this, but I let the blind man touch my whole face.
We're through, Ruby. That's right, Giselle.
There's a big school dance coming up, too. There's a whole school full of boys going to be there.
Well, they can touch your face, but no dance it.
You guys are gross together. Let's go, Samantha.
Samantha pushes Giselle away as Ruby and Beau make out. Later, in a barn, they make out behind hay bales.
Oh, God, Beau, I've missed you so much.
Me too.
What's the matter?
Nothing. I'm just getting a little overheated. And I kind of already know where this is going. Or rather, where this isn't going. Maybe we should just head back.
She kisses him tenderly and removes her tie. She unbuttons her shirt and opens it, revealing her bra.
I think we've waited long enough, don't you?
Ruby pulls off Beau's shirt. They smile into one another's eyes and kiss deeply. She pushes him to his back and gets on top of him. At the dance, Ruby and Abby, wearing gowns, set up the refreshments table.
Abby!
Samantha wheels Giselle to them.
We want you to know we all took a vote, and we've decided that you're the prettiest girl in the school. So we think you have the best chance of being voted Queen of the Fall Mixer.
Thank you.
Queen of the Mixer? Is that something they do? We're planning on making it a tradition. Samantha! Oh.
Samantha hands Giselle a hairpiece with a pink rose.
This represents our school colors. We'd hoped you'd wear it to do us proud.
Thanks, guys.
Well, it's not ticking. It'll look pretty. Come
here. Ruby puts it in Abby's hair.
Oh, yeah.
Wow. Mm-hmm. You two look so gorgeous.
You clean up pretty well yourself, Miss Stevens. I hardly ever see you without a smock on.
Well, I'm chaperoning, so I'll be the one to tap you on the shoulder if you're dancing too close.
Oh.
You two be sure to give all the other girls a chance with boys tonight, huh?
The top has popped off a soda and a girl takes it away. A pair of girls tie balloons to drapes. Mrs. Ironwood steps up to the microphone.
All right, everyone. We are happy to welcome the boys of Willowdale Prep.
Now, I want to remind you all
to behave appropriately. Perfect ladies and perfect gentlemen. Have fun!
She signals the DJ, who drops a needle on a record. Giselle sneers towards the stage.
Oh, would you look at that? My grandmother's favorite song.
A young man shyly approaches Abby and Ruby.
Is he coming over to me? Don't be nervous, he's not that good.
He holds his hand to Ruby.
Go!
She takes it and he leads her to the dance floor. They start to do the twist. Others join in, dancing around them. Later, Ruby slow dances with another young man.
Thank you. I'm gonna take a break and go powder my nose.
Ruby walks past the refreshments table. Buck approaches with a bucket of ice.
Hi, Buck. don't tell me there's some rule you can't talk to students here, too.
And why do you want to talk to me?
All I said was hi. I was brought up to be polite.
I'm sorry. I'm not trying to be rude, but you understand that this is an all-girls school. The rules are pretty strict around here.
Yeah, well, between you and me, I could do without one or two of their rules.
Yeah, I guess I could, too.
Until next time, Buck.
They part. Ruby furrows her brow at Abby, who sits sadly alone watching others dance. Ruby steps up to her with concern. They confront Giselle.
What's going on?
I'm sure I don't know what you mean.
There's no way that none of the boys want to dance with Abby. They are avoiding her like she's a nest of hornets.
Is that so?
What are you up to?
Why do you assume I have anything to do with it? Maybe the boys just get a sense that Abby's a little off, if you know what I mean.
Giselle smiles smugly.
Time to announce the queen.
Samantha pushes Giselle to the front of the room.
Big moment. In this envelope, I have the name of the Queen of the Fall Mixer.
Wow, everybody. Looks like history's about to be made tonight. Our very first queen is part Negro. Let's give a big hand to Miss Abby Tyler.
Abby wrenches the rose from her hair. She looks over her shoulders, embarrassed.
Well, Abby, aren't you going to give us a speech?
Abby storms to the stage and stands at the microphone.
I'd like to tell you what an honor it is to be chosen your queen.
Ruby weeps in the audience.
But clearly, honor is not a word any of you are remotely familiar with.
Spoken like a true half-breed. Here we go. I knew you wouldn't be able to hide your true colors for long.
Putting a hand on you is beneath me, Giselle.
Not me.
Ruby grabs the wheelchair and tips Giselle out of it.
You dummies have already chosen your queen. She's right there,
crawling on the ground.
All hail.
Ironwood confronts Ruby.
You are on thin ice as it is, Miss Dumas. Do not damage yourself further for the sake of a mixed blood that does not belong here.
The crowd parts as Ruby storms through it. Giselle cowers on the floor.
Help me!
Morning. A chauffeur loads suitcases into his trunk.
Giselle went too far this time.
Ruby and Abby step towards him.
It isn't just Giselle. It's the entire institution, Ruby.
You're really gonna leave me here all by myself?
You know they're gonna kick me out anyway. This way, at least I get to do it on my own terms.
They hug.
I'll always be your friend, Abby.
Tears flow from their eyes.
I'll always be yours, Ruby.
The chauffeur opens the back door, and Abby gets in. She shares a sad farewell with Ruby. Abby looks at Ruby through the back window of the car as she's driven away. Ruby scowls towards Giselle and her friends, watching from the school's front door. Ruby bounds up the front steps to confront them.
I think maybe you've forgotten what's important about being a Greenwood girl, Ruby.
I'll tell you what isn't important. Money, lineage, skin color, blood. All the things you idiots put so much value on. Just tell me how you found out about Abby.
She should thank me.
I did her a favor. I'd give anything to get kicked out of this crappy school. Besides, what makes you think I'm speaking to you after what you did to me?
Right. All those chivalrous boys rushing to the aid of poor, helpless Giselle. You loved it.
They do all love me, so don't they? And if little Abby didn't want me to read her letters, she shouldn't have left them unattended in a box behind her underwear with a lock that was ridiculously easy to open. But I guess you know all about lock and keys, since you're basically a prisoner in the storm for what you did to me. It just kills me when I think about it.
I'm sure it kills you to think, period.
You take that back.
Ruby, I've just got a message. You've been invited back up to the mansion.
Why the hell does she always get to go up to that nice house? Ruby's on lockdown anyway. Tell them she can't go.
I'm afraid the Claibornes have the authority to override Mrs. Ironwood's punishments. Louis Claiborne sent for her.
What if I don't want to see Louis, Mrs. Penny? I'm overriding the override.
Ruby, it's just that Louis Claiborne says he's regaining his eyesight. He says he thinks it's because of you.
Louis sits on a bench in his yard. He gazes at the sky. He clutches a walking stick.
Hello, Louis.
Ruby, you came. I was so afraid you wouldn't.
I wasn't going to. You know, you really have to work on your moods, Louis. Don't snap at me anymore, okay?
I promise. Okay, I'm very, very sorry.
Is it true? Can you see?
I can see shapes now. It's not just blackness anymore.
That's fantastic.
She sits next to him.
You know, Ruby, I really can't believe that this is just coincidence that this is happening so shortly after I met you. Perhaps some of your grandmother's abilities rubbed off on you a little bit. That magnolia tree over there. I can almost see it. You know, I used to climb that thing every day as a little boy. And spend more time up there than I would in front of the piano. My bedroom. Just up there, so the garden was always just outside the window. You could see the whole campus, the lake, and the stables from up there, too.
I'd like to see that. Can we go up there?
I don't know if that would be exactly proper for me to bring a Greenwood student up to my room alone.
Oh, come on. I think you can learn a lot about a person from what their room looks like.
She puts her hand on his shoulder.
Okay. Although, you may not want to learn too much about me.
He stands. They link elbows and she leads him to the house. She smiles wide as she enters his room. She gazes at a woman's portrait on the wall.
The woman in the painting?
It's my mother. I don't keep pictures of my father since he was the one who smothered her to death.
Can I ask you why he did it?
I'm sure you've heard the rumors.
Oh, I don't trust rumors. I've been on the bad end of too many of them. And the truth always gets distorted.
I don't think you want to know the truth.
Louis, are we friends?
I would hope so, yes.
Well, then you should trust me. I only want to help you, if I can, in some way.
My mother and I were always very close.
He lies on his bed.
Some nights I'd lie here scared. She would hear me whimpering. I remember hearing her come into the room and I would reach out my hand and she would take it. Please. I want you to know how it was with us.
She takes his hand and lies next to him.
She would lie beside me, on her back. She would take my hand. She would press it against her chest so I could feel her heartbeat.
Ruby holds his hand to her chest.
Then she would take her other hand and place it here.
He clutches his inner thigh.
I'm not asking you to do that. My hand would travel from her heart to her breasts.
He clenches his fist and sits up.
So one night my father found us like this. My God, he was furious. Every time after that, he thought I was crying for my mother when I would lie here, scared. And then it was him who would come see me. He'd lay his belt to me.
Louis rests his head on Ruby's lap.
It's okay, Louis.
After that, my mother found another boy. He replaced me. My father snapped. I stood across the hall and I watched him murder her, and I did nothing. Nothing. I'm sorry, Ruby. Sorry, I don't mean to make things awkward between us.
It's okay. I understand now, Louis.
Tears flow across their faces.
You can trust me. It's okay.
Ruby strokes his hair. Ruby heaves a sigh. Later, Ruby enters the dorms. Samantha approaches.
Ruby? Mrs. Ironwood sent me to get you. She needs to see you right away.
Because what else is new?
Ruby slams the door as she leaves. She enters Ironwood's office.
Let's just get to it, okay? What lies is she telling you now?
Giselle weeps in the corner.
Daddy had a heart attack, Ruby. He died.
Ruby's lips quiver. Daphne stands at the fireplace mantle in her mansion. Ruby sits on a sofa next to Giselle in her wheelchair.
I want you girls to know that things are going to be different around here. I'm not going to end up like your father, dying young, worrying more about others than myself. To begin with, I'm replacing the house staff and Nina is gone. Now you'll get your inheritance, but not until you're both 21. Your father's business partner, Mr. Bristow here, will be working with me to make sure all your financial matters are handled properly. Everything will remain in a trust until you're of age.
Have you told Uncle Jean about Daddy?
Your father's deranged brother is no longer my concern.
But Daphne, you have to tell us enough, young lady.
Furthermore, the days of your indulgent father spoiling you are over. Is that understood?
Yes, ma'am.
Mostly.
You bear the Dumas family name now more than ever. And I expect your behavior moving forward to be irreproachable.
Mr. Bristow puts his hand on Daphne's shoulder. She places her hand on his and looks up at him tenderly. The twins, with tears streaming down their faces, share a stunned glance. Ruby walks a hallway in the institution where Jean lives. An orderly leads her to Jean's room. He sits on a bed in a shared room, staring out a window, with sunlight beaming on his face.
Uncle Jean? It's me. It's Ruby. Do you remember me? I have no idea why you've been moved from your private room to here, but I'm gonna find out, okay? Your brother Pierre has died.
He continues staring blankly out the window.
Do you understand what I just said? My father, your brother, is dead.
He turns his head to her. He holds eye contact while standing.
It was very sudden. Almost immediate, I'm told. He couldn't have felt any pain.
His face twitches and he begins to weep. He grips his bed frame and shakes it up and down. sits back on the bed.
I'm so sorry.
Ruby crouches next to him. Daphne sits in her study, reading documents. Ruby storms in.
How could you be so cheap?
Excuse me?
You put Uncle John in a communal ward.
The man's a vegetable. He doesn't even know where he is.
How would you even know? You never even go out to see him.
Are you quite done?
He knows what's happening to him. You should see where they put him.
Don't you shout at me in this house. I'm the one who makes the financial decisions from here on out. Do you understand me?
No, Daphne. I do not understand you. Uncle John is in very bad shape. He's only going to get worse.
I wasn't aware you earned a degree in psychiatry.
I don't need a degree. I have compassion and human kindness. Not that those words mean a thing to you.
Ruby glares at Daphne, who stands with indignation.
You don't have your father to run to anymore. It's just me. And talking to me that way will only bring you regrets. As a punishment, you are not allowed to attend your father's funeral.
What? You can't do that!
Oh, you'll be surprised at the breadth of things I can do.
Evening. Ruby weeps in her room. Beau enters and closes the door behind him.
How'd you get past the dragon?
What did Daphne do?
Beau, could you lock the door, please?
She holds out her hand and he takes it. They kneel on the floor facing one another.
I have to go back to Greenwood the day after tomorrow. And I just need something nice to happen while I'm here.
They kiss. She opens his shirt and takes it off. He holds her head in his hands. Ruby lays on her back with their lips locked. He gets on top of her. Beau runs his hand along her bare midriff and open nightgown. Candles are lit around them. Morning. Ruby, wearing her school uniform, strolls along a path flanked by hedges. She sits on a bench overlooking the lake. Buck steps up to her.
I'm beginning to think you want us to get caught together.
Oh, hi, Buck. I'm sorry, I didn't realize it was getting dark.
Just trying to be careful. You understand that, right?
Yes. Those pesky Greenwood rules we can't change. I'll leave in a minute.
It's probably for the best. But I guess I'll see you later.
Not if I see you first.
He nods and steps away. Ruby heaves a sigh. He gets onto his cart and drives off. Evening. Louis plays piano. Ruby sits on the bench with him. She smiles at his fingers.
You have started seeing a psychiatrist?
You mean you haven't been all along?
Well, of course, because why would someone like me need a psychiatrist, right?
I didn't mean it to sound like that.
Yeah, well, he seems to think that the reason my vision is returning is because I finally have someone who I can trust in my life. That's you, Ruby.
Ruby's eyes bulge.
Honestly, I can't tell you how glad I am that you came into my life.
Louis, there's something you should know. I should have said something before.
Ruby, when I always assumed you had a boyfriend,
I mean, how could you not? Marilyn Monroe.
She shoulders him playfully. Mrs. Penny escorts Ruby to Ironwood's office.
I've only been back for a couple of days, Mrs. Penny. What crime am I supposed to have committed this time?
Don't pretend you don't know what this is about, Ruby. I can't tell you how disappointed I am in you.
Okay, this should be good.
Don't you dare be so flippant about this. Don't you know this is certain to get you expelled?
Mrs. Penny opens the office door and Ruby enters.
You sent for me? Again?
Sit down. As you may have guessed by now, you have been found out, Ruby.
I figured something was up when I was hauled out of class.
Don't make it worse for yourself by talking smart to me.
Mrs. Ironwood, isn't it customary to at least tell the accused what the fuss is all about?
You are not talking your way out of this one. That in your hand is a signed confession from the handyman, Buck Jensen, recounting all the disgusting details of your tryst last night. Multiple trysts, I might add. Your expulsion hearing will be this afternoon at 1 o'clock.
Mrs. Ironwood, I can understand you being upset, but every word of this is a lie. I don't understand why he would make such a thing up.
You were seen, Ruby. We have an eyewitness who saw the two of you together. So do not play me the fool. You can expect to be on your way home by day's end.
Later, Ruby enters Giselle's room.
Congratulations, I heard the news.
Why are you packing?
Well, if you're getting kicked out, I'm sure Mother's not going to let me rot up here all by myself.
You don't really think I slept with Buck, Giselle?
I don't see why not. He's awful damn easy on the eyes, and let's face it, the pickings at an all-girls school are pretty slim. Unless you're Miss Stevens.
What are you talking about?
Come on, Ruby. You're not that stupid.
Miss Stevens?
You think she's...
You're such a bumpkin, Ruby. You're crazy. Anyway, you may as well unpack. This story is total nonsense.
Why should that matter? You're accused. You may as well have done it.
I'm not taking this lying down.
What a choice of words.
Ruby, don't waste your time fighting this. Can't you see this is our way out of here? Just button your lip and before you know it, we'll be back at our own school with our friends again. And you won't be so far away from your precious beau. Don't you want that?
It's nothing to you, Giselle. It's not your reputation at stake. They can kick me out if they want, but it's not going to be because of a lie.
Can you get my other suitcase down for me?
Later, Ruby sits alone in the front row of the auditorium. A jury of three sit on stage.
And then what happened, Mrs. Gray?
I looked through the boathouse window.
And tell us what you saw, Mrs. Gray.
I saw skin. Ruby and that man were in the heated throes of... I'll just say whoopee.
Compose yourself, Miss Dumont.
Was I giving him his money's worth, Mrs. Gray?
I think we have heard enough.
Ruby stands before the jury.
My defense is pretty simple. I couldn't have been at the boathouse at 7:30 because I was at the Claiborne house then. You can confirm it with Mrs. Claiborne.
Mrs. Claiborne left town this morning.
Well, that's convenient for you. The problem is her grandson Louis also knows I was there.
Louis is blind.
Yes, I noticed that too.
How could a blind man testify as to what time it was?
Ironwood holds up Buck's statement.
Buck Jensen's detailed confession about your multiple trysts, sworn to and signed.
I want him to repeat that lie to my face.
Mr. Jensen was fired and escorted from campus this morning.
Ironwood puts her hand on her hip arrogantly.
Well, I guess you have nothing else to say.
Ironwood takes her seat.
Any last words?
I know Mrs. Gray believes she's telling the truth. But I was not there.
I was...
I'll tell them where you were, Ruby.
Miss Stevens escorts Louis.
This is a school matter, Louis.
Yes, and I have information pertaining to that matter, Martha. I take it that some people here are saying that Ruby wasn't at my house last night at 7:30. I'm saying she was. Court adjourned.
Louis, your testimony about the correct time is doubtful for reasons that are obvious.
Well, see, there's blind, and then there's not so blind anymore. Take the clock on the wall, for instance. I'm reading 1:37.
Ruby's eyes bulge. Miss Stevens smirks.
Yes, fine, but that does not matter. The evidence against Ruby is overwhelming.
Well, Butler knows exactly what time she came and left. His eyes are top-notch, I might add. I think we can assume a case of mistaken identity on the part of Mrs. Gray and throw away a paper confession from a man who's either unwilling to or has been prevented from allowing Ruby to face her accuser, because I believe that is not the kind of railroading the Clairbone Foundation would like to be associated with. Nor is it in the tradition of the Greenwood School for Girls. Is it, Martha?
Ironwood grimaces and sits. Later, Ruby squeezes Louis in an embrace.
I thought I was finished for sure. When she said gaze dismissed, it sounded like it was her last breath.
Yeah, I'm kind of having a hard time breathing myself right now. Oh, thank you.
I had no idea your sight had improved that much.
Well, I mean, the thing about that is...
Now, Ruby, I don't encourage cheating, but I figured they'd test him, so I told Louis what time it was before we barged in.
Everything else I said was true.
You're a true friend. You both are. I'll never forget this. And I can't wait to see the look on Giselle's face when she learns she's not going anywhere. Mrs. Gray?
Outside, Ruby approaches Mrs. Gray.
I just want you to know that I don't blame you for anything you said. And I don't think you lied. But I promise you, you were mistaken.
Ruby, you got away with it. Please don't insult me on top of everything. I saw you plain as day. I saw your face. I saw your dress. I saw your shoes. I saw everything. I know it was you.
Ruby narrows her eyes at her.
What did you say I was wearing?
Ruby sneaks through the dorm hall and enters Giselle's vacant room. She opens the closet and turns on the light. She crouches and looks for shoes. She finds a pair of dirty blue suede shoes under a box.
Blue suede shoes.
Giselle rolls into her room.
Samantha! Where are you, dummy?
Ruby spies through a crack in the closet door. Giselle looks over her shoulder and bounds to her feet. She closes her door. Ruby's jaw drops and she reveals herself.
Giselle!
Oh my god, are you trying to give me a heart attack?
You can walk?
Keep your voice down. What are you doing anyway? Spying on me?
Everybody thought your injury was permanent.
Yeah, well, it wasn't.
This is a new low, Giselle. Even for you. You let everyone keep thinking you were disabled and helpless.
Stop making such a big thing over it. I get treated better when I'm in the chair.
I guess I should be surprised, but... So you were the one who was with Buck.
I had to find something fun to do up here in Snooze City. He was the only game in town. I only slept with him 3 or 4 times. You should feel flattered. He thought I was you.
Well, the fun's over, Giselle. I'm gonna tell everyone what a fraud you are.
Oh, I don't think that's such a good idea, Ruby.
No kidding.
You rat on me and I'll have no choice but to spill the beans about your gay art teacher to Mrs. Ironwood.
Oh my god, could it be any more obvious? Ironwood's gotta be more blind than her nephew.
There really is no limit to the depths you'll sink to.
You better believe it, sister.
Ease up, I'm not gonna roll around in this chair forever. In a couple of weeks, it'll be Christmas, and my present to the world will be me miraculously rising up onto my 2 healthy legs again.
Leave it to you to outshine Jesus on his birthday.
You're the one who always wants to be on the cross, Ruby. Just keep your kisser zipped until then, and everything goes back to normal. Can you handle that?
A mantle decorated festively. A Christmas tree with gifts underneath. In the Dumas sitting room. Daphne watches the twins open presents.
Oh! The day I wear puce.
Daphne frowns.
Ruby, you can have this one.
Ruby furrows her brow at her gift.
Men's shirts and ties. Daphne, how did you know?
I bought them for your Uncle Jean. I thought it would be nice if you could bring them to him.
I think he'd much prefer being taken out of that horrible ward and put back in his private room.
I think you're right. I'll call the hospital today.
Okay, Daphne, what's going on? Giselle and I can do whatever we want. Out of nowhere, you care about Uncle Jean. I have to believe something more than the Christmas spirit's gotten into you.
Ho, ho, ho. Merry Christmas, ladies.
Bruce, come, sit next to me.
Mr. Bristow enters.
Ruby asked me a question. I thought we could answer together. Girls, I have been very joyful these last few days. Bruce and I have decided to marry.
Giselle smirks.
Since your father's passing, Bruce has been a pillar of strength and support to me, and when I didn't think I'd find any comfort, he's been especially caring, and I've come to love him very much.
Mm, and me you, my sweet daffodil.
Gee, Daphne, I don't know what to say. What has it been? 2 months since Daddy died?
This isn't a rash decision. As much as I will always mourn your father, life is for the living. And I'm hoping you can both be happy for us. I'm actually hoping that we can all come together as one big happy family, and I'm hoping that it can be apparent to everyone.
Don't worry, Mother. We'll all show up smiling big in the society pages.
I'd appreciate that, too.
Well, I have a little bit of an announcement myself, but I don't want to reveal it sitting down.
Giselle props her feet onto the floor. She cringes as she pushes herself up from the chair. She stands and struts forward.
Oh my God, Giselle! Merry Christmas.
Daphne smiles and squeezes Giselle's hand, who smirks and shrugs at Ruby. Evening, Giselle hosts a party in the sitting room. She shakes a martini. She takes a glass from a young man and takes a swig.
Look out, boys. Giselle's back in town.
Next to a fireplace, Ruby sits on Beau's lap, kissing him. They stare into each other's eyes.
I have something for you.
Beau, you realize this is a very big deal.
He puts a gold necklace on her with a ring on it.
What are you talking about? Me giving you my swole ring only means I'm yours forever.
Or until you no longer want me. I guess that's a big deal.
She kisses him hard.
I love you, Ruby. If that's okay.
What do you think, Lockhead?
You better say it back.
She looks into his eyes.
I love you too, Beau.
After Christmas break at the school, Giselle steps from the back seat of her car and struts up to her friends.
I know. I know they tell me I'm a miracle.
Ruby crosses her arms. She shakes her head and rolls her eyes.
I'm back.
In outdoor art class, Ruby with her sketchbook.
Happy New Year, Miss Stevens. I think you'll be impressed with what I got.
Mrs. Gray.
Ruby, I'm sorry. Miss Stevens is no longer here.
No longer? What do you mean?
She resigned just before the break.
Ruby's eyes widen. Later, she bursts into Ironwood's office.
Ruby, how dare you barge in here like that?
Why did you fire Miss Stevens?
Miss Stevens resigned.
I don't believe you.
As ever, that does not matter.
Miss Stevens loved it here. She would never resign.
Loved it a little too much, I think. I won't go into details with you, but there was a credible accusation leveled at her by a student. She resigned rather than face the blemish of a hearing. Miss Stevens turned out to be a person of questionable moral character.
This whole school is of questionable moral character.
You have just earned yourself 10 demerits for insubordination. And if these outbursts continue, the end result will be exactly what you narrowly avoided at your hearing. The fact of the matter is, Ruby Dumont, you are simply not Greenwood material.
Ruby narrows her eyes.
You have no idea what a relief it is to hear that.
Outside, Ruby stomps towards Giselle.
Giselle! It was you! I know it was!
Probably. What are we talking about?
You told Ironwood about Miss Stevens.
Geez, you think I'm the only one in this school who's on to her?
Ruby's eyes widen, and she vomits on the path. Giselle and her friends watch with disgust. Ruby sits in a medical room. A nurse advises her.
Unfortunately, the morning sickness is likely to continue for a while. That's just your body reacting to the pregnancy. Of course, we will need to inform your parents. If you'd like to call them first to tell them the situation yourself, you may. But there will also have to be an official notification from the school.
I understand.
Good.
In Ruby's room, Giselle and Samantha confront her.
So, it was morning sickness. Well, this is definitely one way to get us sent back home. I'm glad this works out for you, Giselle.
Giselle tosses her head towards the door, and Samantha leaves.
It's not for sure they'll kick you out for this.
That's where I'd put my money.
Well, my money would have gone on me getting pregnant way before you ever would.
Jeez, Ruby.
Didn't you and Beau ever think about using protection?
They sit on the bed.
Not everyone is as wise as you, Giselle.
Daphne lectures Ruby in her study.
I could have guessed this was coming. How you ever made it to 17 in the bayou without any children is miracle enough. And how I ever thought that decent society would have any influence on you is beyond my capacity. Nevertheless, we must have this taken care of before word gets out.
Do I have any say in this matter?
You absolutely do not. It's bad enough that I have to deal with you and your sister. If you think I'm going to let some bastard child in this house, you are out of your mind. Anyways, it's all arranged. Tomorrow, you will be taken to a special doctor outside of town. I'll also have you know that I'm going to do everything I can to make sure you are removed from your father's will. And speaking of that, if you have any plans of ever seeing Beau again, you might as well put those thoughts out of your head. His parents informed me that they would disinherit him if he ever so much as mentions your name.
In her art studio, Ruby stands at an easel painting a bare tree in front of a gray sky. She holds her belly gingerly. Beau sneaks in through the patio door. She wraps her arms around him and weeps into his shoulder.
Ruby, I want us to run off together.
With what? You're not being practical.
What's practical, Ruby? My parents want me to go to school in France and you.
She takes the necklace off and hands it to him. He shakes his head.
I'm not taking that back. Not unless it means you really don't want me anymore.
Of course I want you. I love you.
I love you too.
She puts it in his hand.
But they will never let us be together.
I don't accept that.
He leans in and kisses her. They look into one another's eyes, and he clasps the necklace around her neck.
Beau, you have to leave. You can't be here.
His eyes well up, and they kiss again. Gives her one last glance, purses his lips, and steps out the door. A doctor places surgical tools onto a tray. Ruby lies on a bed with her feet in stirrups.
The procedure shouldn't take long. If there's any profuse bleeding, we'll suture it and make sure it's completely stopped before we send you on your way.
Her eyes widen.
This isn't right.
She gets off the bed and pulls her pants on.
I'm sorry?
I'm not doing this.
Miss Dumas, I promised your mother you would not leave here until that was completely done.
Well, you're gonna break that promise.
Ruby puts her purse over her shoulder.
Miss Dumas, you come right back here.
Stop. I'm not going back to New Orleans. When you see Daphne, tell her she's finally rid of me.
Ruby's chauffeur drives her along a rural road. She gets out by a pond. The driver pulls past a sign pointing to New Orleans. Ruby turns to a phone booth. Evening, she sits in a car with Paul, her ex-boyfriend.
Thanks for coming to get me. I didn't know who to turn to.
I'm always here for you, Ruby. Especially now with the baby coming.
He strokes her hair.
If you know anything, you know that.
He gets out of his car, walks around to her side, and opens her door. She gets out and they walk a path.
Your grandparent Jack died right out there. He didn't ever stop looking for some secret stash of money he was sure your grandma hid from him. Everybody told him he was chasing a fantasy, but he didn't listen.
Neil headed right to the end.
Yeah, he was digging by the water's edge, stumbled in. Yes, he's too drunk to get himself out. I tried to get in contact with you, to let you know what had happened, but no one let me through to you.
Thanks for bringing me home, Paul. You should get going. I've got a lot of cleaning up to do.
Ruby. Ruby! Stop for a second. There's no reason for you to stay here in this dirty old shack. Come home with me. Let me take care of you. That's all I ever wanted to do.
She smiles warmly to him.
My place is here, Paul.
She walks up the front steps and he takes his leave. Ruby smiles at her home. She enters. Morning on the bayou. In her yard, Ruby cleans clothes with a washboard and bucket. She wears a green floral dress and clutches her belly.
A belly that's full.
Later, she paints outside and her baby bump has grown.
I pray angels protect her.
Time passes, and now she wears a maternity dress and struggles to bend over.
May her heart never know.
She sets up a stall in front of her home, selling jam, peaches, flowers, and needlework. Evening, a storm brews. Lightning strikes. The roof of Ruby's home leaks. She puts buckets under the dripping water.
It's open.
Paul enters.
It's cats and dogs out there. And on the radio, they're saying it could be a hurricane coming on.
What's that you have there?
A letter from Giselle. Picked it up from the post office for you.
He hands it to her.
It's getting real bad out there. Why is Tom Peter coming?
I've ridden out worse storms in this house.
Why would you put the baby at risk?
The baby's in the safest place it's ever going to be.
The sirens are on.
Ruby sits to read the letter.
Dear Ruby, bet you never dreamed you'd receive a letter from me. Well, here it is.
Ruby, it's stuck.
The window.
Guess what? Mother gave in and let me come home. Someone spread the word all over Greenwood that you had a bun in your oven. I wonder who. Boy, you really stuck it to her good. I guess I really should also tell what's going on with Bo.
The letter blows away. Paul tries to hammer the window shut. Ruby clutches her belly. She falls to her hands and knees. Paul darts to her.
That's it! We're getting out of here now!
I can't leave, Paul!
No, come on! We're both getting out of here now!
Paul! The base is coming!
Now?
I'm sorry! I didn't plan it this way!
Dishes fall from shelves.
Okay, just hang tight! I'm gonna try and seal this place up, okay?
Ruby sits in a corner. Paul nails boards to windows.
Hang on!
Paul! He's coming!
A tree breaks through the window, knocking Paul over. With blood streaking his face, he crawls to Ruby to assist her. Morning on the bayou. A gently flowing river under a blue sky. A crocodile wades in a swamp. Paul steps out of Ruby's home. She follows him, cradling her baby in her arms. Paul picks up a toppled rocking chair and places it upright. Ruby takes a seat in it.
You're holding up.
I'm doing great.
She smiles into the baby's eyes.
Oh, she's a beauty.
She's perfect.
You settled on a name yet?
Her name is Pearl.
Hi, Pearl. I'll never stop loving you, Ruby. I'll never stop asking you to marry me.
I know, Paul.
No one has to know the truth about us. I don't expect anything but a no right now. Just do me a favor. Tell me you'll think about it.
Ruby looks at Pearl, then smiles to Paul.
I'll think about it.
I'll go check on the roof.
Okay.
Paul stands and steps away. Ruby smiles at Pearl. She stands and paces along the porch. She crouches to find the letter from Giselle that blew away. She picks it up and sits on the front steps. She reads it.
I guess I really should also tell what's going on with Beau. He's still in France, and he'll probably even go to some French college. And get this, he's super serious with some rich French girl. If he marries her, he'll become a duke or something. I don't know why you didn't just do what Mother wanted and get rid of the baby. Think about all the things you gave up. On the other hand, I do enjoy having a notorious sister. I even miss you sometimes, if you can believe it. And I just love reminding old Daphne that she's going to be a grandmother. She gets sick to her stomach every time she hears it. I wonder if we'll ever see each other again. Your darling twin sister, Giselle.
Ruby folds the letter and smiles at Pearl, who rubs her face.
Welcome to the bayou, Pearl Landry. To Mom. Tate.
Ruby stares ahead, then grins at Pearl. Fade to black. The end. The descriptive video for Pearl in the Mist was a production by Serafino Sound Studio. Script and voiceover by Cameron Catalano. VC Andrews, Pearl in the Mist, was a presentation by Real One Entertainment in association with Jane Starts Productions and Dan Angel Productions, starring Rochelle Bano, Karina Bano, Richard Harmon, Gil Bellows, Laura Lee Bell, Ty Wood, Sam Duke, Sage Linder, Bronwyn Smith, Chad Willett, and Mary Lou Henner. U.S. casting by Jennifer K.M. Treadwell, CSA, and Monica Kelly, CSA. Casting by Judy J.K. Lee. Music by Matthew Rogers. Editor Mark Shearer. Costume designer Ken Shapkin. Production designer Nick Richardson. Director of Photography David Bercovici Artida. Consultant Andrew Niederman. Supervising producer Don Knight. Executive producers Tom Berry, Jane Starts, Dan Angel, and Brianne Hartley. Executive producer Jane Charles. Produced by Rick Nish and Matthew Chapera. Based on the novel by V.C. Andrews. Written by Gregory Small and Richard Blaney. Directed by David Bercovici Artida.